You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
I'm Dave Raymond, and this is MLB.com Extras, American League Central, with Jason Beck, who has been following the stories this week here at the winter meetings. Jason, a lot of action in the division, but for the Tigers, what is the top priority right now?
I think right now, if they had to have do one thing, they've got to get something clarified as far as the outfield. You know, they say they're set with, you know, J.D. Martinez in one of the corners, Rajay Davis getting the bulk of the time in the others. But, you know, but they still would like to get a left-handed hitter to at least mix in there. I think when you look at the splits that Rajay Davis put up, lefties, righties, I think there's a, you know, specific motivation, a specific purpose to get a left-handed hitter in there to kind of take at least – you know, some sort of like a platoon type mix there. You know, the good news there is that, you know, they have options. They can go big. You know, Yoenis Cespedes obviously has been mentioned quite a bit. But they can go small because there's some smaller names out there who, while maybe not necessarily, you know, being viewed as like big time production guys, can fit a hole specifically, you know, towards what the Tigers really need.
Well, let's start with Cespedes, because you've been following this one, been reporting on again, off again, talks with the Red Sox. Where does that stand right now?
Well, I mean, the Tigers like Cespedes a lot. I mean, the track record speaks for itself. You know, if not for Victor Martinez's knee injury in the pursuit of Prince Fielder, you know, he might well have ended up in the Tigers uniform all along back, you know, when he first signed with Oakland. You know, so, you know, they know what they're getting there. They like what they've seen. They like the power. They can live with the on-base percentage. I think for them, the big question is going to be cost. You know, a lot of people are calling about the Tigers pitching. A lot of people see an opportunity to maybe, you know, get one of their starters and kind of take advantage of a situation where, you know, if you can get a guy on a contract year, you know, whether it's Porcello or Price, you know, you can pay, you know, it's going to be a heavy, you know, price tag given arbitration. But you're not talking about a long-term deal like what you're seeing for the free agent starters out there. And really, some of the other guys out there on the trade market, such as Cole Hamels. You know, if the Tigers are going to trade one of those starters, you know, they've got to be able to fill a hole in, you know, the void that it creates. It's a little bit trickier now than it was before, simply because by trading Robbie Ray, they traded one of those young options that they were looking at maybe to fill a hole. Now they have other guys, you know, such as Buck Farmer, Kyle Ryan, mm-hmm. Drew Verhagen, who might be able to slot in, but I think the Tigers would rather avoid that. You know, they'd rather go in with four established starters and then have a young guy as a fifth, such as Shane Green, than have to fill two slots with young guys, you know, and especially now when you're looking at competing in a division that's going to have, you know, rotation like what the White Sox have, like what the Indians are building, and even quietly what the Twins have if they can get some contributions from your young guys. I think pitching's at a premium right now. And when you look at what the rest of the division is doing, you know, the Tigers starters are more valuable to them right now than they were, I think, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I want to get back to the starting pitching and, for that matter, the bullpen, which is always a topic of conversation with your team. But sticking with the outfield situation. So the Yoenis Cespedes situation, fluid and complex, but there are, as you mentioned, some other lesser known names or maybe not quite as expensive guys out there. Matt Joyce is a name you've floated. Are there others that you might suggest would be a potential fit?
Well, I mean, you hear a lot about the Tampa Bay Rays being willing to trade, you know, a lot of their outfield help. You know, they've made matches before, obviously, with David Price. You know, the Rays know that system. I think they could find something that could work there if they wanted. You know, you hear a lot about what the, you know, Braves are looking to do as far as their outfielders, you know, including Evan Gattis, who, you know, I think some people see as more of a catcher. The price tag's a little heavy on that, and I think it's a different situation in that the Braves are looking more for prospect talent, and the Tigers are in this situation where, you know, while they still have some talent there, it's not at the depth of what other organizations have. And so that, in part, is why you see them getting creative and trying to do things, you know, maybe with some of their major league guys and trying to match up there with teams that could use, you know, some of their guys who are already on the big league club and might be close to free agency, but who fit a short-term need for certain teams. You know, there's other guys out there on the market. You know, Andy Dierks is a guy, mm-hmm. out there obviously familiar with. You know, they lost him on waivers at the end of the season. He just got non-tendered. You know, he's a guy who can match up, although you know you don't necessarily know what you're getting with him because he's coming off the injury-plagued season. So there's options there. They're not glamorous, but for what the Tigers need, I think they have to be considered as options because you know it's not easy to wave goodbye to one of these starters. And then, you know, at what cost do you make that outfield better? Do you make that lineup better? You know, if you're looking at having three starters and then going into, you know, every other series or every third or fourth series, having to trust young guys for two of those three games.
Yeah, they're in a complex spot. Plus that rotation, as you point out, with Scherzer's situation now, and then of course Price and Porcello in contract years. I mean, it could get dicey for them. Is there pressure right now to make a big move and to make a big push in this division? Because it seems like everybody else is loading up.
So far, I haven't seen it. I think Dave's kind of operating his own. He tends to operate at his own speed at the winter meetings. You know, he's had situations where it's almost been the opposite, where the rest of the division is not doing a whole lot, and then the Tigers go out and do something big, and they say that they're looking beyond, you know, necessarily just their division competition, but also looking at the rest of the league. I think that was part of the motivation when they got Torrey Hunter a couple years ago. And when they did some of their moves, you know, last year to try to diversify their offense to compete on a playoff setting. And we saw what happened where, you know, it made a little bit of a difference, but the bullpen plagued them.
All right, let's go to the bullpen then. Interesting that Andrew Miller, that David Robertson, big names off the table now, two biggest off the table. I don't think I heard the Tigers' name mentioned in either of those sweepstakes. Were they involved? I mean, if there's one team that needs bullpen help, it's Detroit.
Right, and this was a team that was tied in, you know, at least in rumors, to almost all the big names on the bullpen market. But the reality is, you know, other than cursory conversations at the GM meetings, you know, kind of, you know, checking in, kind of seeing what the interest might be, there really wasn't much. I think there was one meeting on Andrew Miller, at which point it became abundantly clear that his market was going to be beyond what they were willing to do. I don't even know if there was that on David Robertson. What the Tigers have been looking to do, and I know it's not necessarily a popular sentiment here, is that they're looking to do smaller deals. You got to remember, this is an organization where the only non-closing reliever to get a long-term deal under Dave Dombrowski since he took over as GM was Joaquin Benoit. And he was kind of in a unique situation when he did that after 2010 season. It's a rarity, and it's not something they're really looking to do again, especially after giving up what they gave up to trade for Joaquin Soria to set up for them, this coming season, unless, you know, Joe Nathan struggles again and they slot Soria in the closing role. What they're looking for now is the supporting guys. I think they're looking for smaller deals, maybe do a number of smaller deals to bring guys in, you know, have them compete, and then trust in the numbers that, you know, one or two of those guys are going to shake out and be able to emerge from the pack and help you. And if you can get that, I think the Tigers would be happy. It's going to be interesting, though, from the left-handed side, because there's really a huge void there that they're going to have to fill with somebody.
Well, let me ask you about Jabba Chamberlain. I mean, I think initially it was thought that they would probably let him walk and he would probably just walk. Are they more engaged and interested in bringing him back this year?
I think the market came back down a little bit, and I think it remains to be seen just how far the trickle-down effect goes from, you know, Robertson signing and how that affects the negotiations for a lot of these other guys. But, you know, if Jabba lingered on the market, I think there would be interest there to bring him in and have him kind of, you know, at least, you know, support, you know, what they have in the bullpen, maybe work alongside Bruce Rondon in the seventh inning and kind of be able to bring him along. That's a situation that's probably going to take some time to sort out. Time will tell what the Robertson deal means for all these other, you know, right-handed relievers, the non-closing guys, and what you can expect out of them. There's still a few levels to go before we really know, you know, kind of whether that means more guys are going to get multi-year deals, lucrative multi-year deals, than even we expected going in, you know, given how many teams were serious about upgrading bullpen.
Boy, still a lot for you to keep your eyes on, Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Stay busy this week, my friend. Jason Beck, at Tigers.com. Alongside Jack Morris, as we talk about the Royals and what they're up to this week at the winter meetings. And Jack, I mean, the great story of the regular and then postseason, but you figure James Shields probably going to get away to a higher bidder. They're going to have at least one starting pitcher issue to figure out.
Yeah, and it's really not a shocker because it seems like everybody at these winter meetings are looking for starting pitching. James Shields, obviously a free agent that everybody in Kansas City, I think, expected to exercise his option and test the market here this winter. So they're going to have to replace him some way, somehow, and he's a guy that eats a lot of innings.
Yeah, not likely to get one of the frontline, you know, John Lester's out there, but maybe a Brandon McCarthy or somebody along those lines.
Yeah, it's funny to me. There's a lot of teams looking for that midline starting pitcher. And, you know, there may be just not a whole lot of them left after we get, you know, Lester's deal done and you get Scherzer out of the way and, you know, you move on from there. But obviously there's a lot of teams looking for starting pitching. And the Royals have got kind of the landmark bullpen now. It's revolutionized, I think, the way a lot of teams are going to look at how they build a ball club, especially when they've got seventh, eighth, and ninth guys, shutdown guys like the Royals have had. All of a sudden, starting pitching may not be as large of a commodity or a need as they once were.
Okay, as great a challenge as that is for Dayton Moore, he also has what appears to be the challenge of figuring out how to replace Billy Butler in that lineup. And again, we're seeing a lot of the bats flying off the market too.
Yeah, they also lost Josh Willingham to free agent or to retirement. So they had two right-handed power hitters that are no longer in their organization, and they're going to look to replace those. Obviously, there's a group of young guys coming up that they might take a look at, but it's always hard to replace a youth with a veteran, especially a guy like Billy Butler, who's been a real part of their organization for a long time.
Yeah, so plenty on the plate for the Kansas City Royals. Well, their manager, Ned Yost, talked to the media, and here were his thoughts on their offseason plans.
I told our front office last year in these very winter meetings, is find a way to get us to 90 wins, and they got us to 100. So, you know, it's kind of the same mandate this year. You know, find a way to do it. But you know, they've worked extremely hard. Dayton, you know, as hard as he works during the summer, it's twice as hard now trying to put a team together and trying to fill certain holes that. We need filled, and they've been nonstop working on it. We've talked about a number of different guys, free agent guys, and a number of different guys that maybe we could make deals for. I think James and some of the top guys, you know, they're waiting for one of the big boys, Lester or Scherzer, to make a deal and set the market and go from there. But, you always hold out hope. Does it look like we're going to be able to get them back? I think that somebody's going to be able to outbid us for them. But, he was tremendous when he was with us for 2 years. He came in and helped change the mindset in our locker room and with our organization. And, he's a special guy. I'm not looking to fill that spot. You know, Duffy and Ventura, I think, are going to be fantastic for us. You know, Guthrie and Vargy, Guthrie had a tremendous September and a great postseason for us. And Vargas actually had a very good postseason for us. You know, Vargy struggled a little bit, three starts in September, but up until that point, he was, dynamite for us. So I think a combination of that. And you don't know who's going to pop up. I mean, if Zimmer shows up healthy, his stuff is dynamic. His stuff's right on line with Ventura's, you just don't know what Finnegan's going to do. You don't know what Hoch is going to do, and that's without even, getting another arm, which we plan to do. So, you just have to get there and then see how it all plays out. And I felt really, really good when we were able to sign Hoch because I went out a number of times during the postseason and watched him throw. And it's like, golly, I mean, can you get on the mound right now? And he's like, man, I feel like I can. So, I was really, really encouraged by watching him with his throwing program. I was kind of hoping that we would be able to find a way to keep Billy with us, and I thought probably it would. But when I heard Oakland's number, I was like, Billy's got to go. That's great for his family. That's great for him to be able to, sign a 3-year deal at $10 million a year. So, I was really happy for him. What I was really excited about was the way that our kids stood up during the playoffs. And I got to quit calling them kids. I apologize how our guys stood up and played the game. And, you know, we've talked about for years about taking their game to the next level and what it feels like and the intensity and the focus and the whole mindset of taking their game to the next level. And they took their game to the next level during the playoffs. I mean, for them to experience that, to understand it, feel it, know what it feels like, you know, is a great experience because now you know. You know, take your game to the next level. What does that mean? You know they know. They took their game to the next level. And, you know, their mindset was so singular into winning the game. There was no, you know, at times guys would be struggling and, you know, I got to get my average back up. I got to do this. And it was more trying to, you know, work on individual goals more than team goals. And once the playoffs started, that was gone. That totally evaporated. Everything was about winning this game, finding a way to win the game. I don't care what it takes, a walk, a hit, a stolen base. If you got a pinch run for me, that's fine. If you got a defend for me, that's fine. And they understood it, and they embraced it, and they were extremely successful doing it. So with that experience, I'm really excited to see what they can accomplish next year.
Also, Ned Yost talking about those expectations, right? And it is a different ball game now all of a sudden for a World Series Kansas City Royals. How do they deal with that target on their back every day now?
Well, I think there's a lot of teams that looked at the Royals and say, how did you get there? You know, this wasn't supposed to happen. Oakland had them in their back pocket and it got away from them. And yet the Royals were really one out away from maybe even winning the World Series. So I think the expectations are going to be a lot bigger for them. But with that being said, they've been building this organization and building this team towards a world championship for quite some time, and I don't think really they've lost that many pieces yet. If they can add to it and the confidence that they've gained from postseason run, I think they're a team that certainly is going to be in contention in the American League Central.
Yeah, and the flip side of high expectations is that your guys in the clubhouse have high expectations, right? They know what it takes.
Well, they've been there now. They've had a taste of it, and I promise you, the guys that have played in World Series, they want to get back. It's a lot of fun, and it's why we all put on that uniform. You know, money aside and contract aside and all the great things that come with life in the big leagues, I think all players want to ultimately have a world championship ring.
Yep, no doubt about that, and you have yours. Jack Morris here as we talk about the Kansas City Royals with Jordan Bastien, and let's talk about the newsmakers, the initial newsmakers at the winter meetings this year, and that would be your Indians, the Brandon Moss deal with Oakland. Shocker. I don't know about that, but it was a big piece, I know, coming into this meeting for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it came time for Oakland to tender contracts, and he was a guy that they did tender, you still could identify him as a trade candidate, especially kind of the direction. I think we're all kind of trying to figure out the direction the A's are going, but you could see the potential was there. Rumors started swirling last week. You know, they wanted to wait till they got to the winter meetings and got everybody in the same room together to kind of hammer out the final pieces of this deal, which were in place last week. So Moss brings a lot of power to Cleveland. You know, Joe Wendell, a prospect who was really blocked by a lot of players in Cleveland, he goes to Oakland. You know, and this solves one of the Indians' big tasks this winter, which was to get an impact bat. Brandon Moss, when he's healthy, which he wasn't for much of last year, you know, he provides that type of power that Cleveland was looking for.
Okay, well, you bring up the big question, right, the big issue, which mm-hmm. is his health. And a lot of people, when they saw the trade, they said, okay, Joe Wendell looked at his numbers last year, 250-plus hitter. Is there fear, let's say, that the A's and Billy Beane know something about Moss's health that isn't apparent to everybody else?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, there's a couple ways to look at this deal. You could look at it almost as a one-year deal for Moss, because if he doesn't perform, because he's still in his arbitration years, you know, he could be a non-tender candidate next year. So the Indians could be looking at it from the framework of, hey, you know, we might only have this guy for 1 year. We're not going to give up a ton. The other part of that is if he has a great season and he does what he is capable of doing and he does have that power boost by leaving Oakland and going to Cleveland, you know, this is a guy you have under control for 2 years, and potentially down the road you could turn him into a first-round pick through the qualifying offer system. So there was a lot of, you know, ways for Cleveland to look at it. As far as the health goes, I mean, they're confident that he's going to be ready to go for opening day. You know, if he would have to start on the DL, it might not be expected to be a long stint. And, you know, I talked to Moss yesterday, and he said, you know, he feels the hip explains 90% of the problems he had offensively last year, that after he got the injection right shortly before the wild card game, he was able to finally swing like he wanted. And then you saw in the wild card game what he did. He said he felt normal, And that really gave him the confidence going into the winter that the hip was the problem, and they got that fixed surgically in October.
Okay, well, and certainly that wild card game, if that's evidence of that, then then bully on him and the Cleveland Indians. And it looks like a pretty nice pickup, certainly. Where do the Indians figure they will use him?
Yeah, right now, positional versatility is something that Francona and the GM, Chris Antonetti, really like, because Cleveland isn't a team that can go out and you know, just add tons of resources. They don't have a ton of resources, so they got to be creative. So they like guys who can move around. So that appealed to them because Moss can play left field. He can play right field. He can move to first base. You know, he's a hitter first. So obviously if he needs the DH and they want to put some other guys in, you know, they view him as an option at all those spots. Right now, obviously, they have Brantley in left, you know, an MVP candidate. You got Michael Bourne in center right now. So really right field is what fits the most, especially because you have Carlos Santana at first. And you have Nick Swisher coming off two knee surgeries at DH. But then you still have David Murphy and Ryan Rayburn. So there's a bit of a glut there. Antonetti said yesterday that, you know, they could open the season with all these guys and make it work, especially with some of the platoon attributes for some of those players. But at the same time, I could also see them looking to trade from this surplus to try and address another need, maybe to help the pitching staff.
Okay, and to that end, what is the status of Nick Swisher? You mentioned the knee injury, but this deal would impact how he's used as well.
Yeah, I think it adds some insurance because both of those guys are kind of uncertainties as we sit here today. You know, we're going to go into spring training and really need to monitor their health. I mean, can Moss recover from this hip? Can Swisher recover from the knees? Are they both problematic? But as we sit here today, I think Swisher, you got to think of him as a DH first, and then maybe he can be a part-timer at first and maybe right field if he's cleared for that type of activity as well. So, you know, that's such a big contract, and he's coming off such a rough year for him, a career worst year, and he's also, you know, dealing with the health issues. So I don't think that's a contract that they're going to have an easy time trading away. So I think they're focused on trying to get him healthy and being the player that they thought they signed three winters ago.
With regard to Moss, how big an issue was his prior relationship with Terry Francona in getting him?
And when I think that played a role. It obviously helped the Indians in terms of their scouting side. I mean, they have the manager. They could just go, hey, tell us about this guy. You know, and obviously it's been a while since they were in the same clubhouse together. But talking to Moss yesterday too, you know, he said that really eases the comfort level. He can come into this clubhouse right away and know the environment that he's stepping into and kind of know that the way Tito runs things and the kind of atmosphere he tries to create. So there's that comfort level there, both from the player's side and from the Indian side, because they already have somebody who could tell the team and tell the front office, you know, kind of about what kind of character he is. And from all accounts, he's a great clubhouse guy as well as a great power hitter.
Let's talk about some of the youth coming your way and what the Indians feel like they have in the pipeline, either for trades, because there is some lack of flexibility, right, in payroll for Cleveland. So maybe some of these guys are chips. But who are some of the top individuals we should be looking at right now?
I mean, right now they have a wealth of outfield and middle infield prospects. That's why a guy like Joe Wendell was really expendable. You know, you have Francisco Lindor, their very highly touted shortstop prospect. They're not going to trade Lindor. You know, they'd have to be blown away. But you've got Jose Ramirez in the majors at shortstop. You know, he's a guy whose long-term future is kind of uncertain with Lindor's presence there. You've got guys like Clint Frazier and Tyler Naquin and Brad Zimmer, some high-round outfield draft picks who are rising through the system and have a lot of promise. So some of those guys could be floated in trade rumors and things like that. So the Indians really feel like they're in a position right now where if they wanted to make an impact trade, they have those types of pieces. Eric Gonzalez, another shortstop. They have those types of pieces where they could make an impact trade.
If they were to make an impact trade, what does Antonetti feel like his needs are right now?
Well, I mean, they're looking at starting pitching, kind of more of a middle-tier free agent class, and then maybe other players who, you know, maybe trade candidates that fit into that category. And also, if you're looking just positionally with the amount of contracts in place, third base would be another area that could be vulnerable or in need of an upgrade. So when we entered the winter, it was easy to say right field and third base make the most sense in terms of the position players. And obviously they got Moss to help out in right. So now Chisenhall, he had some issues last year inconsistently with the bat and also not his best year defensively. So he's a guy that, while they have a lot of hope in him, you know, he's a guy that could potentially stand to be an upgrade to that position. So, but right now I think the focus does shift to pitching. They have a really good, promising young starting staff. but their rotation really is only about 7 or 8 deep right now, and they'd really like to lengthen that out, you know, just to make sure that they have enough contingency plans in place for next year.
Okay, and talking about next year moving forward, in terms of flexibility, Bourne goes into the final year of his $48 million deal this year, right?
No, he's got two more years and an option.
Okay, so the flexibility may not exist in the real near future then. All right, so this is and then with regard to what else is going on in the division, White Sox made a lot of moves, day one of the winter meetings. Mm-hmm. Do you suppose that will add any intensity to the need to go out and do something with that pitching staff?
You know, I think the need to address the pitching staff is always there, regardless of what the other teams are doing. And just from working with the Indians, they're not a reactionary club. They're not a club that sees what Detroit does and goes, oh, well, now we got to go do this. You know, they entered the offseason with their goals. One was to get an impact bat, and they addressed that. And the other was to address the starting pitching. And I think one thing that's holding that up may be, you know, you wait for some of these top free agent pitchers to sign and kind of set the market, and then you can kind of start targeting more realistically those guys who are on the market but waiting for those deals to come to fruition themselves. So I think that's kind of where they stand. I think, you know, before we head to spring, you're going to see the Indians, you know, add a bunch of non-roster guys to help the depth and potentially sign a starter or trade for a starter to lengthen out, you know, that promising young pitching staff.
All right. Well, I know you're in good shape. You know, you got most of your work done at the early part of the winter meetings. I mean, the Moss thing's done. Now you can relax.
Yeah, I was hoping they would announce it, you know, the next couple of days, give us something to speculate about for a couple of days. But no, it was good. It was good for them to make some noise on the first day. I know a lot of Indians fans probably aren't used to the Indians making a big splash at the winter meetings. Right. So and from that aspect, I think it was good to see.
All right. Well, great job. Thanks for the time, Jordan. With Scott Merkin here at the winter meetings in San Diego. And Scott, you got it off to a great start on day one. The White Sox accomplished apparently all their goals on day one. What was the biggest surprise to you, the Robertson deal or the trade for Samardzija?
Yeah, I can't take credit for getting off to a good start. I'll give that to Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and Jerry Reinsdorf on that one. But Samardzija had been talked about for a while, and even Robertson, before it was reported Sunday night by New York paper that he was close. Last week I got the feel, at the beginning of the offseason, I kind of felt like they were going to go young for closer. They had Jake Petrischka, Zach Putnam. They have a kid named Frank Montes who throws 100 miles an hour. He profiles maybe more as a closer than a starter. But then last week I started getting a feeling that they wanted a closer, and David Robertson was the best guy out there. So neither one was that big of a surprise. Just how quickly they both happened was a huge surprise.
How happy are they? I mean, Rick Hahn's got to be tickled pink. Robertson, really a premier guy in that position for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know how much easier it is when you have that ninth inning, when you're set, when you know there's no one else you have to worry about. If you can just get it there, it shortens the game. You know, I mean, it really does. People say, it's a closer. Bad teams have closers with 40 saves. The Sox were an awful team in 2013, and Addison Reed had 40 saves for him. You know, so, I mean, you can have a bad team with a good closer, but I just think if you want to contend, you need a guy who's going to pitch in the ninth inning. Now, they've had teams, you know, in the past that have won without a set closer. Look at the Sox in 2005 with Shingo Takatsu, Dustin Hermanson, and Bobby Jenks, and they won the World Series. But, I mean, I think it makes a huge difference. You can use some of the younger guys bridging up to the ninth inning, and you have a steady starting staff that's gonna get you to the sixth or seventh almost. Well, seventh or eighth, really, almost every time.
Was this a target all along, Robertson, or were they involved to some degree? And Andrew Miller, was this a stated goal from the beginning?
You know, I think Andrew Miller was a little much for what they wanted to go to. I think if they were going to go that high, they were going to go for a pure closer. And Andrew Miller had a great season last year, but he's not a closer, you know, at least at this point. So I think Robertson was the guy. Robertson was their target all along, and it makes sense to bring him in. It really does. And I've heard another thing is, you know, they needed veteran kind of leadership. And with him and Duke and Adam LaRoche and Jeff Samardzija, it's, you know, great boost for the clubhouse, let alone for the roster. And let me tell you, a huge boost for the fan base, judging by what I've seen on Twitter and what I've heard overall from people back home in Chicago.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Southside very happy with that move. Now, what about the numbers? 4 years, $46 million, the numbers that have been bandied about. Are you surprised at all by those levels?
I am, just because the Sox haven't done that before. That's not their MO. They, you know, they don't go 6-7 years on a starter, and they rarely pay for a closer because they've had really good luck developing their own. Addison Reed, Sergio Santos, Bobby Jenks, you know, they develop their own closers. They do Roberto Hernandez, if you want to go even further back. So they, you know, they do a good job of that. But, you know, I think they had some money to spend. Rick Hahn did a great job in this reshaping process of getting money off the books. And because of that, they were able to spend this money on the closer.
Okay, Jeff Samardzija, 4-player deal with Oakland. Again, we're still waiting for all the details to come out on this one. I mean, you needed a right-hand arm in that rotation, and it's about as good as you can get right now in this market.
Yeah, and, you know, I think they're hoping that he's more than a one-year rental just because of the fact that he's from Indiana. He played football and baseball at Notre Dame. He grew up a Sox fan. No, he's not going to give any kind of discount. I think he sees, you know, he's expressed before that he wants to go through this year and experience free agency, and he sees what John Lester is being talked about and what Max Scherzer is going to get and what James Shields is going to get. So it makes sense he wouldn't sell himself short, you know. But I think they're hoping that the local kid enjoying kind of the spotlight at U.S. Cellular and a team that, if not as a playoff team this year, certainly could be in the very near future and for a lot of years to come, will sell him on staying long term.
What kind of financial flexibility will they have next year?
You know, off the top of my head, they have John Deng still has two more years, so he's one of the big contract. They really don't have a lot of big contract guys going into this offseason. They had, before these moves, they had $65 million contributed mm-hmm. with the five arbitration guys, not counted in on that. So John Deng and Alexi Ramirez really were their biggest contracts, not counting Abreu, coming into this offseason. And Deng has 15 and 16 left at about 14.25 each year. And Ramirez has this year at 10 and then an option for next year at 10. So they're in good position. You know, they can continue maneuvering. And one thing I know about the Sox is when they have a chance to win, they go for it. You know, I remember in 05, Kenny Williams told the story that they were over budget, but he really thought Tadahito Oguchi from Japan was the guy to get, was the guy who put him over the top. And he went to Jerry, and Jerry said, you know, okay, we can go over budget if you really think this guy's going to make us a winner. And he was a key guy, hit a key home run in the playoffs against Boston, and key guy for that championship.
So it looks like that they think this is the time to strike in the Central. Indians make a move. You know, Tigers always lurking, certainly. What does this do for the expectations on the South Side?
Yeah, you make a great point that, I mean, that division is tough. You know, I mean, the Royals are the AL champions. They didn't even win the AL Central. And the Detroit Tigers are still the champion. Is to quote the great wrestler Ric Flair, to be the man, you got to beat the man. So until the Tigers are unseated, they're still, you know, the team to look at. And Cleveland, very underrated pitching staff. Some of the best pitching I saw came from that rotation last year. You know, Corey Kluber and Carlos Carrasco off the top of my head. And Danny Salazar's got amazing stuff, you know, if he harnesses it. So, and the Twins have some young guys that they're kind of on the rise for. So I think it puts them in contention. Some people argued with me that last night on Twitter when I said, you know, they're back in it. I'm not saying they're going to win it. I'm not saying, you know, cancel all your vacation plans for October because the Sox are going to be playing the Cubs in the World Series this year. But I'm just saying, they now are a contender. I mean, you win with pitching, and their pitching staff stacks up with anyone in the American League right now.
Yeah, and the move for Samardzija, clearly one that would say or communicate, we are going for it this year. Although it does do something longer term for the team as well, and that it may buy a little bit of time for Chris Beck. Is that a storyline?
Not just Chris Beck, but Tyler Danish mm-hmm. is a kid on the rise. Frank Montes, who I mentioned is a closer candidate, could be a starter in the future still. Carlos Rodon, who may work out of the bullpen this year. This gives him a little more time. But it's not really as much buying time as just he was the best. They needed a right-handed starter to go with Sale, Quintana, Danks, and Hector Noesi, who's the fifth starter right now at least. And they got about as good as they could. And Samardzija, I don't know if it's because he was facing the Sox and he did well against them, but he's got a killer ERA. And U.S. Cellular Field, off the top of my head, I think it's below one in his like four or five starts there. So they got a guy who apparently plays well in the ballpark too. And I mean, you just you rarely see a team that goes in the offseason and says, we need this, 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 and this, and they get them all. Yeah. You know, I mean, it really, aside from maybe a left fielder, they've hit every target they wanted to in the offseason.
Alexi Ramirez's name was out there for a while as a potential trade piece. Is he pulled back now?
Well, I mean, no one said anything officially, and I think no one's ever pulled back completely because if someone comes to Rick Hahn and says, you know, we know you value Alexi at X amount, but we're going to give you 20 times X or 5 times X or 8 times X for the talent value, then you make the deal and you figure out how to, you know, you have Carlos Sanchez who can move over to short. Tyler Saladino is another young kid who could play there. But I think in terms of a team that wants to contend, you need Alexi Ramirez at that shortstop spot. And Tim Anderson, who's their number two prospect per MLB.com, is probably a year away from being able to start, if not a little more. So having Alexi for 2 years works out pretty. He's a great guy to have because he's huge for the team, but he's huge if you want to move him too and getting stuff in return.
All right. Well, listen, you've got a lot going on. Great start to the winter meetings for the White Sox. Scott Merkin, thanks so much. With Rhett Bollinger as we talk Twins, Rhett, and let's go back a week, right? And the signing of Torii Hunter, I don't know, a shock necessarily through baseball, but A nice return and a good piece for the Twins going into this
year. Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise for them a little bit. I don't think people thought that Torrey Hunter was going to sign with a team that wasn't really in contention the last few years. I think Torrey Hunter has been kind of chasing a ring here with Detroit the last couple of years. So in a sense, it was a surprise, and it's a big pickup for this club. The Twins needed an outfielder, a guy who had some power from the right side, and on top of it, this is one of the, you know, the better veteran leaders in baseball. The Twins have a very young team. He'll be a big impact in that clubhouse, teach some guys like Aaron Hicks maybe to play the game the right way. So it's definitely a big signing for the Twins.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the personality aspect of it, right? Because it seems to me like that was a large part of the motivation to bring him in.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, this team's very young. Obviously, the kind of the veteran of the team right now is Joe Mauer, but he's more of kind of a quiet leader, whereas Hunter, as we know, definitely is more of the vocal guy, kind of rallies some of the guys in the locker room. And some of the new coaches I brought in, the same thing. Eddie Guardado, new bullpen coach, was kind of famous for all of his antics in the clubhouse as a player, another great guy. So I think that's kind of the nice thing this year is the clubhouse should be a better atmosphere. Paul Mauder was saying yesterday in his big press conference here at the first day of the winter meetings that the clubhouse has kind of changed over the years. But it's good to have a guy like Hunter who kind of knows how to kind of police things and kind of be the elder statesman for the Twins.
It kind of changed. There's a lot of change right now. And you mentioned Molitor. This is his first winter meetings, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you got a chance to talk to him a little bit yesterday. What are his impressions and goals here in the early stages?
Well, it's kind of nice for him to get a chance to sit in on these meetings here, sit with Terry Ryan and his staff. He sat there with the agents. He can kind of see who the Twins are after, offer his input on who he'd like to have, what kind of tools he'd like to have at his disposal, whether it's another outfielder or he needs bullpen help. A starting pitching, obviously, is a huge, you know, kind of key here, what the Twins want the most, their top priority. But, and Molitor is a guy that's been around the game for a long time, but this was the first time in a clubhouse last year when he was a coach for more than 10 years. And he just said the clubhouse kind of atmosphere to him was different than he remembered it. So he kind of wants to bring some of that back. He mentioned early on maybe even banning some of the devices like iPhones and iPads. I don't think he's going to go that far, but I do think he wants the clubhouse to be a little more lively this year.
That would be a tough one to pull off.
Yeah,
I think
with this, I don't know if he knows that generation of us that are always on our phones and our iPads. So.
Now, he's been on the job a little better than a month now. What has he done in terms of reaching out to players? Obviously, the Joe Mauer relationship is going to be an important one for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and even recruiting players. I mean, he talked to Torrey Hunter, kind of pitched for him to come to Minnesota. And Joe Mauer is, you know, a big part of this team, and they're going to sit down really soon. They haven't yet, but Molitor said in the coming weeks here, because they're both in Minnesota, that they're going to sit down and maybe kind of get breakfast and just kind of hash over everything and kind of get a feel for what Mauer thinks about the team and maybe where he thinks the team is going, what he thinks could maybe be fixed or improved. And then Molitor said he's going to give him his two cents because Mauer's coming off of a tough year, you know, and now he's played for 10 seasons, so he's kind of going to the second half of his career. And Molitor, obviously, as we know, played 21 years and had a great second half to his career, so it'll be very helpful for Mauer to be able to talk with Molitor like that.
Okay, so the Twins' major focus at these winter meetings, Terry Ryan wants to help that starting pitching, and Lord knows the team ERA has been a real struggle in recent years. Who are some of the targets right now? We're not talking, obviously, Lester, but like a Brandon McCarthy, a Jason Hamill. Who's on this list?
Yeah, I mean, those type of guys. Brett Anderson's a guy I think they've reached out to. They've talked to Francisco Liriano and Edison Volquez, former Pirates. Liriano might be tough because he's tied to draft pick compensation. Twins might be a little bit more reluctant to give up a draft pick, knowing they're still kind of building a little bit toward the future. But definitely looking at a lot of those targets, meeting with a lot of agents. But yeah, kind of more in that second tier of guys, maybe even a Ryan Vogelsong type, but not exactly. Yeah, definitely not going to go after the James Shields or the Lesters or the Scherzers.
So, has there been any movement on anybody in particular yet? Have you gotten any morsels?
Nothing really. Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty quiet for the Twins. A lot of those agents, they've met with everybody so far. You know, a lot of the agents, nothing really gaining too much traction yet. And they're looking at trade options too, talking to teams. But so far, nothing too specific. The only thing they've really done was losing Chris Colabello on waivers to the Blue Jays. So far, yeah, it hasn't been too much going on for the Twins yet.
Boy, and there's a lot of intensity right now in the division, right? And I wonder how that would affect how the Twins see things going forward, right, when you see teams like the White Sox making big improvements, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the biggest thing. I think today when we talk with Terry, we want to know, you know, do the Twins have to react to this kind of move? You know, the White Sox making a huge trade to get Jeff Samardzija, adding a really good reliever slash closer and David Robertson. You know, they added LaRoche. I mean, the White Sox are going all in. You know, the Tigers are always all in. The Indians are a very good team and played great in the second half. And the Royals went to the World Series. So the division all of a sudden is definitely not a cakewalk. The Twins, again, you know, are going to definitely have a, you know, tough time in it.
As far as youth coming up. I know it was a big Arizona Fall League for Eddie Rosario, and maybe who else we might be looking for.
Yeah, he definitely played his way back into being a top prospect. He definitely had a tough year to start out the year. He was suspended for 50 games and kind of struggled to Double A, but got to the Fall League and played really well. I think he finished second in the batting race in the Fall League, reestablished himself as a top prospect. He's back to playing the outfield after playing second base for a little while, because the Twins have more needs in the outfield. But he's another one of their big prospects, along with Miguel Sano, who we know is coming off of Tommy John surgery, but should be ready to go in spring training to compete for the third base job, but more likely to start the year likely at Double A. Same with Byron Buxton, the top overall prospect in baseball, coming off the finger surgery, but same thing, should be ready to go for spring training and will be competing for a job, but more likely to start at Double A as well.
Yeah, so long-term, the Twins have to be optimistic when you talk about some of the young players that they have coming along. And then last year, Danny Santana, he even showed up in the Rookie of the Year voting. Pretty important position at shortstop for the Twins as well. So, what is the long-term horizon? What are they looking at as that time when maybe they really are back up on their feet and competing in the division?
Yeah, the nice thing for the Twins, they do have a lot of top prospects coming through and a lot of position player prospects. And right now it seems like the way the game's trending, it's tough to find offense and it's tough to find these position players. If anything, pitching's probably more easy to acquire than it's been in years, just because there's so many good pitchers out there. The run scoring's down. They're definitely set up well for that. They can make trades from that too if they want to. But the biggest thing for them is just going to be able to acquire starting pitching. And as soon as they can get that rotation kind of under, wraps and locked down, that's when they can start competing again. Because the last 4 years, the rotation's been one of the worst in baseball. And until that's fixed, that's going to be their big issue. I think maybe 2 years from now, this year it should be better, kind of build off of last year a little bit. They play a little better in the second half. And then maybe the year after that, really compete for the division. But like I said, the division is not getting any easier now. The White Sox are going all in too. It'll be definitely interesting to see how it goes.
How attractive is it to free agents, to players out there, the fact that you could pitch at Target Field? I mean, it is surprising to me that the numbers have been as bad as they have been for Minnesota, given that they play in that, what you would guess, to be a pitcher-friendly ballpark.
Yeah, definitely it's true. It's definitely a good recruiting tool to be able to have a big park like that for a pitcher. But the thing right now, they've had trouble finding guys to strike people out. So a lot of guys are putting the ball in play, and their corner outfield defense the last few years wasn't very good. And so a lot of balls were getting through, which didn't help their cause at all. So I think once they kind of get some of these prospects up, they're younger, more athletic, get the defense behind them. And they do have pitchers, in the minor leagues. Alex Meyer's a huge prospect. Trevor May kind of got a taste of the majors last year. And you've got guys like Cole Stewart, Jay Oberios. So they have guys in the system, and they're obviously counting on those guys to come up soon too. But at the same time, they need to supplement those guys maybe with some veteran-type starting pitching to help this rotation out.
Okay, you talk about corner outfielders now. With Torii Hunter signed a little over a week ago now, he goes to right field ostensibly, and so Osvaldo Arcia, where's he go? Left field? How's it going to work
out? Arcia will go to left field under the scenario. Torii Hunter will stay in right field. Center field's a little bit up in the air as of right now. The Twins, if they don't make a move to get a center fielder, will do some sort of a platoon kind of with Aaron Hicks and Jordan Schaefer in that mix. Hicks has definitely had 2 years now of chances, and he's really struggled. But I think the thing that will help him is just having Hunter there kind of as a mentor to kind of show him how to prepare, because that's kind of been Hicks's issue sometimes. I know last year in the season he got called out by management for maybe not preparing enough and not watching enough video and showing up at the ballpark a little bit late. So I think it'll be kind of nice to have Hunter kind of as a big brother-type mentor toward him.
Okay, as we kind of put the wraps on this thing then this week, what are you expecting in terms of activity for the Twins this week? You think we'll see some action by Terry Ryan?
I think we'll definitely kind of get the seeds planted for action. I don't know the Twins will make a big signing or sign anybody here. In the past, a couple years ago, they made a big trade, trading Ben Revere on the last day of the winter meetings to get Trevor May. We talked about a big prospect. There's obviously a chance something like that could happen, but I think more than anything, the Twins are just kind of planting those seeds to see, because for whatever reason, it seems like the pitching market's kind of backed up until these guys like John Lester and these guys sign. And once that happens, maybe the floodgates will open and the Twins will get somebody. But I think until the big guys go, I think a lot of the other guys are kind of waiting to see what they get.
Okay. Lots to keep your eye on, Red. Appreciate you joining us. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, American League Central.